Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts. Here's Daniel's prompt.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So I mentioned that a few years ago I printed out a book for myself, a print book, a photo album essentially, of inspiration for my home office, and focused mostly on, I love collecting photographs of people who have really nice multi-monitor displays. My humble 3-monitor array is put to shame by some of the things that people rig up, especially in the financial industry, where you can have day traders and investment bankers with, like, I've seen 12. NASA is an amazing, have an absolutely outstanding setups. But I was looking for, you know, industries that I wanted to kind of have a little collection from different contexts. Emergency dispatch centers are another big user of multi-monitor displays. And there was one that I dredged up on the internet that I hadn't heard about, and that's flight operation centers. And these are the kind of heart and brains of airlines that are responsible for managing the ongoing operations of all the planes that airline has in the sky. And it's kind of amazing to think that, you know, besides the air traffic controllers and all the people you don't sort of hear or see from in the context of stepping on an airplane, you've also got this kind of back office that are keeping track of your flight in the air. So I'd love to learn a little more about the work of these flight operation centers. Does every airline have one? And what is it that they're doing exactly? Keeping track of the weather, keeping track of the flight, but what's their purpose?
Hey everyone, welcome back to my Weird Prompts. We are coming to you from our usual spot here in Jerusalem, and today we are diving into something that feels like the ultimate expression of organized chaos. I am here with my brother, as always.
Herman Poppleberry, ready to decode the Matrix. Or at least the Matrix of airline logistics. Our housemate Daniel sent us this one, and it is actually kind of funny because he has been obsessed with his home office setup lately. He has got 3 monitors now and thinks he is a high-frequency trader. But he sent us some photos of these massive flight operation centers and asked if every airline has one and what they are actually doing with all those screens.
It is a great question because when we think of flying, we think of the pilot and the air traffic controller. Those are the 2 voices we imagine running the show, but there is this third pillar, the flight operation center, or sometimes called the airline operation center, that is essentially the brain of the entire company. And Daniel is right, the monitor count in those rooms is absolutely staggering.
It really is. If you walk into a major airline's operation center, like Delta's in Atlanta or Lufthansa's in Frankfurt, it looks more like NASA Mission Control than a corporate office. You have got these massive floor-to-ceiling video walls, and then every individual desk has 4, 6, maybe even 8 monitors. And to answer Daniel's first question, yes, virtually every commercial airline has some version of this. If you are operating under what the Federal Aviation Administration...
That term, operational control, is really the key here. It is not just about watching the planes move on a map like we do on our phones. It is a shared legal responsibility. Most people do not realize that for every flight that takes off, there is a person on the ground called a flight dispatcher who shares the legal authority for that flight with the pilot in command. If the dispatcher does not sign off on the flight plan, that plane is not moving.
Exactly. It is a dual signature system. The dispatcher and the pilot are like the 2 keys you have to turn simultaneously to launch a nuclear missile, but instead of a missile, it is a Boeing 787 full of people heading to Tokyo. And the reason they need so many monitors is that they are looking at a much wider dataset than the pilot is. The pilot is focused on their specific aircraft and the immediate environment. The dispatcher in the operation center is looking at the entire network.
So, let's break down what is actually on those screens. Because Daniel mentioned weather and flight tracking, but that is really just the surface level. Herman, you were reading about the different desks or pods in these centers. How is the work actually divided up?
It is usually broken down into specialist functions. You have the flight dispatchers who we just mentioned. They're the ones calculating the fuel loads, looking at the winds at 35,000 feet, and choosing the most efficient route. But then you have the crew schedulers. This is where it gets incredibly complex. They have to track the duty hours of thousands of pilots and flight attendants. If a flight is delayed by 2 hours in Chicago, that pilot might time out and not be legally allowed to fly the week. The
And that is a massive puzzle. You are dealing with labor contracts, rest requirements, and geographic location. If you need a pilot in Seattle and your nearest reserve is in Dallas, you have a problem. I imagine they have screens dedicated just to the health of the crew network.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have the maintenance controllers. They are watching the mechanical health of the fleet. Modern planes are constantly talking to the ground via satellite. If an engine on a flight over the Atlantic shows a tiny vibration that is slightly out of the normal range, a maintenance controller in the operations center sees it before the pilot even gets an alert. They can start looking for parts and technicians at the destination airport so the plane can be fixed the moment it lands. Or they might decide to swap the air scrapers right quickly and McCrine the inquiry if anything do yet.
That is that second order thinking we always talk about. It is not just, is the plane okay now? It is, will this plane be okay for its next 4 flights today? I think that is a huge part of what those monitors are doing. They are predicting the future. They are looking at the tail routing. If plane number 742 has a bird strike in Denver, what does that do to the passengers waiting for that same plane in Orlando 6 hours from now?
That is exactly what the routing desk does. They are playing a high-stakes game of musical chairs with multi-million dollar assets, and we cannot forget the load planners. They are calculating the weight and balance. They have to know exactly how much cargo is in the belly, where the passengers are sitting, and how that affects the center of gravity. If you have ever been on a flight where they ask people to move seats for weight and balance, that request often originates from a data point in the operations center.
It is fascinating because it is this invisible infrastructure. We see the gate agents and the flight attendants, but these people in the center are the ones actually pulling the strings. I want to get into how they handle what they call irregular operations, or IROPs, because that is when the room really earns its keep. But before we get into the chaos of a storm at a hub airport, we should probably take a quick break.
Yeah, let's hear from our sponsors.
Let's take a quick break from our sponsors.
Are you tired of the sky being too blue? Do you wish you could just change the atmosphere from the comfort of your own backyard? Introducing the Larry Tech Atmospheric Resequencer. This revolutionary handheld device uses proprietary ionic burst technology to temporarily alter the local climate within a 12-foot radius. Want a snowy Christmas in July? Just point and click. Tired of your neighbor's barbecue smoke? Resequence it into a refreshing pine-scented mist. It is perfectly safe, mostly siloed. It'd fail, King I what call you can be while I rode.
All right, thanks, Larry. I am not sure I want to be anywhere near a handheld atmospheric resequencer, especially if it involves a car battery.
Yeah, Larry really outdoes himself every week. Anyway, back to the flight operations center. We were talking about the nerve center aspect. Herman, let's talk about the nightmare scenario, a massive summer thunderstorm hitting a hub like Atlanta or Dallas. What happens in that room when the weather turns?
That is when the wall of knowledge, as some call it, becomes vital. In a major weather event, the operations center turns into a tactical command post. They have meteorologists on staff, not just people watching the news, but actual atmospheric scientists who are looking at high-resolution radar and predicting exactly when a window might open up between storm cells.
Right, because if an airport goes into a ground stop, you have hundreds of planes suddenly diverted or stuck. The operations center has to coordinate with air traffic control, but they also have to think about the business side. Which flights do we cancel? Do we cancel the short hop to Birmingham to save the long-haul flight to London? Which one has more connecting passengers?
That is a huge point. They use software called optimizers. When a big disruption happens, the computer can run thousands of simulations in seconds. It looks at the downstream impact. If we cancel this flight, 300 people miss their cruise in Miami. If we cancel that one, 50 people are stuck in a small town with no hotels. The monitors are showing these heat maps of passenger impact. They are trying to minimize the total misery index for the day.
I love that term, misery index. It sounds like something we should have a monitor for in our house. But there is also the gate management aspect. I have seen those screens where they have a top-down view of the airport. It looks like a video game.
It basically is. It is called a gate ribbon. Every gate is a horizontal line, and the planes are blocks of time on that line. If a plane lands early but its gate is still occupied by a plane that is delayed, the operations center has to find a new home for that arriving aircraft. If they mess it up, you end up sitting on the tarmac for 45 minutes waiting for a gate, which is one of the most frustrating things as a passenger. The people pull in the paint, it can mayor, just the look, make sure.
One thing that really struck me when I was looking into this is the fuel tankering strategy. Can you explain that? Because that is something you would only see in a centralized operation center.
This is a great example of the big picture thinking. Fuel prices vary by airport. Sometimes it is significantly cheaper to buy fuel in Houston than it is in New York. The operations center calculates if it is worth the extra weight, and therefore the extra fuel burned to carry more fuel than they need for the first leg, just so they don't have to buy the expensive fuel at the destination. They call it tankering. They are literally weighing the cost of the extra weight versus the savings at the pump, all in real
That is incredible. So they are essentially commodity traders while also being safety coordinators and logistics experts. It makes sense why you need six monitors. You have one for the weather, one for the fuel prices, one for the gate map, one for the crew status, one for the flight plan, and maybe one for the news to see if there is a geopolitical event or a security issue.
Exactly. And speaking of 2026, the technology in these rooms has jumped forward significantly in the last couple of years. We are seeing a lot more integration of satellite-based tracking. Remember back in episode 212-12 when we talked about AI benchmarks? Those same types of large language models and predictive algorithms are now being used to suggest reroutes before the weather even hits. Instead of a human dispatcher having to manually redraw a flight path around a storm, the system proposes three options ranked mechanically.
It feels like the role of the person in the center is shifting from data entry and calculation to decision making and exception handling. The computer does the math and the human handles the nuance. Like, okay, the computer says cancel flight A, but I know that flight has an organ transplant being transported in the cargo hold, so we have to prioritize it. That is something an AI might not prioritize unless it is specifically flagged.
Exactly. There is a lot of human-in-the-loop necessity here. And Daniel's question about whether every airline has one while the big guys have these massive rooms, the smaller regional airlines often have scaled-down versions, or they might even outsource some functions to a larger partner. But the dispatch function is non-negotiable. You cannot run a commercial airline without that ground-based co-pilot watching your back.
I think it is also worth mentioning the security desk, especially in 2026 with the increased focus on cybersecurity and drone activity around airports. These centers now have dedicated feeds for cyber threat monitoring and unauthorized aerial activity. They are looking for anything that could disrupt the flow.
It is a total spectrum awareness. And I think that is the takeaway for Daniel. The reason for the multi-monitor setup isn't just to look cool or to show off. It is because the human brain is actually very good at pretentive processing. If you have a map on one screen and it suddenly flashes red, your peripheral vision catches it while you are working on a flight plan on another screen. It allows these people to maintain situational awareness.
It is like being a giant with eyes all over the world. You are seeing the sun rise over the Atlantic on one screen and a snowstorm starting in the Rockies on another. I wonder, Herman, do you think this level of centralization is a vulnerability? If one of these centers goes dark like a power failure or a cyber attack, the whole airline stops, right?
it is a massive single point of failure. That is why they have hot backups. Most major airlines have a secondary location, often miles away from the main one, that is a mirror image of the first. They can flip a switch and be operational from the backup site in minutes. They have redundant power, redundant satellite links, and even redundant staff on call to man the backup station if the primary one has to be evacuated.
It is the ultimate belt and suspenders approach, which makes sense when you are responsible for hundreds of thousands of lives every day. So, what are the practical takeaways for our listeners? Next time you are sitting in a terminal and your flight is delayed, what is actually happening behind the scenes in that operation center?
The first takeaway is, it is almost never just one thing. If you are told there is a mechanical issue, the operations center is likely already three steps ahead, looking for a replacement part or a different plane. If it is weather, they are playing a giant game of Tetris to fit your plane into a shrinking gap in the clouds.
And second, realize that your individual flight is part of a massive, interconnected web. Sometimes your flight is delayed not because of anything happening at your airport, but because the plane you are waiting for is stuck three cities away and the operations center has decided that keeping that plane on its original tail is better for the overall network than trying to swap it.
Right? Efficiency for the many sometimes means a delay for the few. It is cold comfort when you are the one waiting, but there is a logic to it. Also, if you are a tech nerd like Daniel, looking at these setups is a great lesson in dashboard design. These centers are the gold standard for how to display high-density information in a way that is actionable.
I think that is a great point. The user interface of a flight operations center is a masterpiece of information architecture. Maybe we should get Daniel to redesign our kitchen core list using gate ribbon logic.
I can see it now. Korn is currently at the sink gate, but his dish loading process is delayed due to a lack of clean sponges. Herman is diverted to the trash taking out runway.
Exactly. We need more monitors in the living room. That is the real conclusion here.
I think Daniel would agree, but honestly, looking at the future, I think by 2027 we are going to see these centers start to integrate more urban air mobility data. As air taxis and delivery drones become more common, the sky is going to get a lot more crowded, and the flight operations center of a major airline will have to coordinate with these smaller players. The wall of knowledge is only going to get bigger.
It is a fascinating world. And hey, if you are listening and you work in one of these centers, we would love to hear from you. What is the weirdest thing you have ever seen on your monitors? Was it a UFO that turned out to be a weather balloon, or a literal bird in the control room? You can get in touch through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
And if you have been enjoying the show, we'd really appreciate a quick review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other people find us, and it makes our day to see what you think of our deep dives. We have been doing this for 270 episodes now, and the community feedback is what keeps us going.
It really does. We love exploring these rabbit holes with you. This has been My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. Thanks to Daniel for the prompt. We will see you all next week.
Safe travels, everyone, wherever your tail routing takes you.
Until next time.
You can find all our past episodes and the RSS feed at myweirdprompts.com. Thanks for listening.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.